and welcome to Out of Bounds. I'm Tish Perlman. My guest is Louise A. Bloom. Bloom is an associate professor of English at Mansfield University in Pennsylvania. She has published poetry, short stories, and a novel entitled Amnesty, which was a Lambda Literary Award finalist for Best Lesbian Fiction in 1996. She is also the author of an emotionally riveting and deeply honest, as well as very funny memoir called You're Not From Around Here, Are You? A Lesbian in Small Town America, published by the University of Wisconsin Press. Thank you for joining me.
Well, thank you for having me.
Now, you were a community grassroots organizer in your earlier days. Were you also a blooming writer at that same time?
Oh, I've always been a blooming writer, yes.
And what kind of organizing were you doing?
I was doing community organizing. I worked for a national group called ACORN, and I worked for them for several years. And we worked on all kinds of issues, basically organizing neighborhood groups around issues as parochial as stoplights and things, and then moving up to voter registration and voting campaigns and things like that.
And you were incorporating some of your writing while you were doing this kind of stuff.
Were you
writing poetry and stuff as well?
Mostly I was writing. I ended up with one huge novel about community organizing, which is in my attic, but...
Really?
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the book that you did get published first. It's called Amnesty. Tell us a little bit about it.
That's my first novel, and that's about a woman who teaches at a small college in, you know, rural Pennsylvania. And basically it's framed around the death of her father, and she's coming to terms with her childhood during Vietnam and her old relationship with her two older brothers, one of whom fought in Vietnam and the other resisted the draft and went to Canada. So they all come back together again for the funeral for the first time.
Mm-hmm. And was this autobiographical in some ways?
Oh, yes, it was fairly autobiographical.
And but you decided not to call it a novel.
It was definitely a novel by the time I was finished with it. I mean, it's true that I grew up in a small town in Ohio with two older brothers, and that really marked my experience growing up. But this really became a novel. The characters took on a life of their own.
Mm-hmm. And how did your family feel about it? They must have recognized themselves in it.
Oh, yes. I guess I thought when I wrote it that my sister, for example, who didn't make it into the novel, would read it and say, oh, yes, that's exactly how it was growing up. But in fact, she said, I don't remember anything like that. And my mother just said, you know, I didn't come off very well in that book.
Oh.
And, you know, I really had to, first of all, realize that, oh, you know, my sister's 7 years older than me, and her experience growing up was entirely different than mine.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother, well, you know, it was a character. It wasn't her.
So she was able to live with it. Now, this novel was a finalist for the Lambda Literary Award for Best Lesbian Fiction.
Yes.
Do you have any kind of comfort zone problem with being categorized like that as a lesbian novel, lesbian writer? Does that stop some readership?
Oh, well, I don't know. I'm sure that it does stop readership. I think as far as I'm concerned, initially, I was very excited to be a lesbian writer, just as I was very excited to be a lesbian when I was coming out and figuring everything out. And now that it's some time has passed, I feel impatient, you know, as if, you know, I don't want to be in just one section of the bookstore.
I mean, I just think, what if Tennessee Williams had ended up in one section of the bookstore, or Virginia Woolf, or, you know, Gertrude Stein?
Yeah, when the novel first came out, I used to go to Barnes & Noble and take it, one copy from the gay and lesbian section, and put it over in the main fiction section.
And so do you think, now that the movement has passed so many years since Stonewall, especially in 1969, do you think most people are getting tired of being ghettoized, as a lot of my friends in San Francisco called the fact that they could only wander around the Castro and then were castigated in the rest of the city for many years? Are people wanting to live in the open?
Oh, I think the whole marriage movement is really showing that, you know, we're tired of that. You know, I mean, it's time to admit us into the mainstream. At the same time, if it hadn't been for the category, the ghettoization, I don't know if that the book would ever have gotten published, since it was, you know, the main character was a lesbian and it was first person from her point of view. So in some ways it let me in, as those categories let many people in, and then I think we just get impatient with that. because we're still walled out of the, you know, the white male monolith.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, white male novelists considered the norm, and the rest of the people are little categories. I know what you mean. So let's talk about your autobiographical memoir called You're Not From Around Here, Are You? It was fascinating. Tell us why you decided to write that, though.
Why did I decide to write that? I wrote it initially just because I wanted to tell the story about how my partner and I came to have a relationship and to become pregnant and to raise a child together. And I just felt like that at the time had not been done. Nobody had really written about that reality in a small town. And I have lived in a lot of small towns for most of my life. And the thing I've realized is that, you know, there's a lot of gay and lesbian people in small towns and in the hills surrounding small towns and in rural areas, just as there are in cities. Mm-hmm. And I just wanted to tell a different side of the story.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, most of the stories have been written from urban settings.
Yes.
You know, gay men coming out in San Francisco and having a jolly old time of it, taking over a whole street, right?
Yeah.
But did your partner have any trepidation about it? This book is so brutally honest, and it's so revealing. And I mean, it seems to me it made you even more vulnerable than you were.
Yes. Yeah, she certainly had trepidation. I mean, we've been together for 17 years, and she's incredibly supportive of my work. However, you know, it was hard for her when the book came out, and you know, periodically I would give readings and people would say, "So, are you going to write a sequel?" And Connie would say, "No, she's not going to write a sequel."
So now, this book came out in 2001, so
yes,
it is fairly recent.
Yes.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And so Connie does not want you to write a sequel. Well, tell us a little bit about your experience that you portray in the book.
Well, what I portray in the book is living in a small town as an outsider on several levels. One is that I wasn't from there. It's Wellsboro, Pennsylvania. And there are people who are definitely have been in that town for a long time. And if you're not from there, then you're not part of the town. So we were already other, but then we were also other because of being lesbian. And once we decided to come out publicly, which we did, well, we had a commitment ceremony in 1993, and I decided to send a wedding announcement to the Elmira Star Gazette and see if they would print it. And they didn't print it, but they did a large feature story on us, and that's kind of how we came out in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania.
Uh-huh. And what a way to come out, too.
Yes.
Tell our listeners what happened to you during that time after that article came out.
Initially, before the article came out, we had bought a house in Wellsboro. It's a beautiful town. It was our first house. We felt like, oh, it's such a tolerant place, because our approach to everything has always been, I feel like if I expect the best of people, then they usually rise to the occasion. And so we just felt like we could walk around holding hands, we could, you know, sit on the porch with our arms around each other, and everything was fine. And then once the article came out, and it was a very positive article because it was our point of view and it was all about lesbians finding love and acceptance in Wellsboro, Pennsylvania, putting words to it like that really provoked a reaction from the town, both in the form of letters to the editor, in which they were, many people seemed determined to show that they were not actually a loving, accepting town, you know, but far from it. And they called us all kinds of things, like sodomites and, you know. And then two other things, like we kind of became a place for the neighborhood teenagers to drive by and throw beer cans and yell obscenities and things like that. So it became less and less comfortable to live there.
Mm-hmm. But you continued to stay there for quite a while, and in some ways you fought back.
Yeah, well, I thought it was a beautiful place, and I kind of have rural small towns in my blood, and I enjoyed living there. And we fought back for a long time. But then I guess I thought once our daughter was born, then people would see, oh, gosh, they're really just like us. But in fact, having a child didn't change anything. And that was when I thought, we can't live here anymore. Because we would be pushing her in a stroller, and guys would still drive past and yell dykes and other obscenities at us. And finally, when she was three, some high school boys stole her sandbox and all her toys out of the backyard in the middle of the night. And I just looked at her face when she went out there and it was gone. And I thought, I can't send her to school here. It's one thing for me to make a decision to live in a small town and fight back, but it's another thing to subject a child to that.
And are you continuously surprised by how really intolerant people are in this so-called melting pot of America?
Well, I'm surprised by intolerance on all levels. I mean, yes, I'm surprised by it. On the other hand, I'm not surprised by it. I think that now it's much easier, for me anyway, to be a lesbian in America in 2008 than it was in 1995, mm-hmm. when I started writing the book.
Mm-hmm. And you probably understand more about why people stayed in the closet for so many decades.
Yes.
Because, I mean, the old saying is, we don't mind these people as long as they keep their lives private, right?
Right.
We've all heard that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that, you know, I always found that annoying, mm-hmm. that idea that, you know, I should have to keep my life private. Mm-hmm. And now, of course, I love seeing that people are lining up to get married and, you know, I just think that's great and really grassroots.
Uh-huh. Do you think, like some gay and lesbian people do, though, that the gay community is stepping into the same trap of marriage as straight people have found?
Sure we are. But, I mean, as soon as we have relationship, we're stepping into the trap. I mean, when two human beings come into close contact, there's certain rhythms that fall into place and pitfalls and everything. So, sure, I mean, I could think, well, you know, marriage is just another example of, you know, the patriarchy and ownership of women and everything. But on the other hand, I think, boy, we need some federal protections. I mean, if something happens to me, Connie can't get my Social Security. I mean, if we don't own the house together. I mean, there's just, mm-hmm. there's certain things that we need. You know, for 17 years, she couldn't get on my health insurance. Now she can. So, you know, and also there's the symbol. I mean, I think that for many people, it's an important symbol to be married, sort mm-hmm. of that final reaching of adulthood.
Mm-hmm. And to show yourself publicly.
Yes. Yeah.
As a committed couple. Yes,
yeah,
I understand that. Yeah, yeah. Now, do you think the culture has moved from tolerance to acceptance? Because tolerance is still a step behind.
Yeah.
Are you finding more acceptance, for instance, now that you live in Corning?
Yes, definitely. Because when the book came out, we had lived in Corning for about a year, and the local paper did a large spread about it, and the local bookstore had, you know, they ordered a lot of copies of it and had a signing for me, and I never had any negative responses. I only had positive responses. And what surprised me was that the very first people who came to that signing in Corning were a very elderly couple. And they bought the book, and they bought it because they have a child that is, you know, was gay, and they wanted to understand his experience. And, you know, I think more and more people are realizing that, you know, we're in their families, we're all over, and what's the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
I think especially now, when you look at what's happening globally with global warming and with war, and, you know, it just sort of seems like this is really a very small issue.
If you're just joining us, my guest is Louise A. Bloom. She's an associate professor of English at Mansfield University in Pennsylvania, as well as an author. I want to ask you this. You are obviously a role model because you're an out professor. What kinds of problems are some of the students still bringing to you, and in what ways do you help?
Oh, interestingly, they're still bringing to me the same problems of being thrown out by their parents, of not, you know, having their financial assistance from their parents cut off. I'm sure that life in the dorms for an out gay or lesbian student is very different from my life as a out lesbian professor. On the other hand, there are students who have been out, you know, since they were in high school, and it's no big deal. But for the most part, the small the students from small towns are facing the same issues, I think, that they did 10 or 15 years mm-hmm. ago.
And so they still need support?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. And do you think some of the TV shows that have come out with fairly positive, sometimes stereotypical gay characters has helped in the culture at large to make people at least a little bit more comfortable at the thought of gay people?
Probably. I mean, I don't really watch television, but mm-hmm. it seems to me that any getting ourselves out there in any way makes it positive.
Mm-hmm.
Like when Clinton became president on the gays in the military thing, and that was such a huge issue, you know, of not allowing gays in the military. And even though the whole movement ended up with the Don't Ask, Don't Tell fiasco,
yeah.
It made people use the words gay and lesbian and talk about it. And, you know, anytime we get that out there.
But it was official policy to keep people in the closet, which was exactly what the gay community was fighting against.
Right.
I really think that was one of Clinton's major mistakes as a so-called moderate even. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. In your biography, it says after 9/11, you co-organized a panel on Islam. So tell us about some of the political work you've been doing in the last 10 years or so. What was that about?
Well, what that was about was right after 9/11, it wasn't just me, it was several colleagues and also Connie, my partner. We felt that we needed to address what was happening and that we needed to immediately move to the idea of not exiling Muslims or not doing finger pointing. But Mansfield is a pretty uniform campus. I mean, it's largely white, it's largely working class, and we just thought it was important to have a panel that said, what is Islam? You know, let's come, we have several faculty, you know, and people from the community present information, questions and answers, and 350 people showed up.
Mm.
And, you know, I think it was a really good thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's also talk about some of the gay and lesbian politics that you're involved in. Are you still involved in gay and lesbian parades, panels?
Some, but less so now than I was. I think that for me, things changed when I had a child. I mean, then I really felt more like, you know, I guess the identity I started embracing was, you know, being a mother, breastfeeding, things like that. Now that my daughter is 12, of course, she's starting to move away from me and I'm moving back into other spheres, but I have been less active on that issue than I was in the past.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And how is it in the schools where your daughter attends? Are you able to be out as a lesbian mother?
Oh, yes.
And have you gotten any negativity from that?
No. She started out in public school in Corning, and now she goes to Chemung Valley Montessori School. And, of course, that's an incredibly tolerant, wonderful place. But even when she was in the public school, there was really no issue. I mean, we were out from the very beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it was okay. When they did Father's Day projects in school, they would have Zoe do a project for Connie's birthday, since that's about the same day as Father's Day. And,
okay.
You know, it worked pretty
sweet.
Well.
Yeah, that's great. Let's talk a little bit about the new novel that you've been working on and that may be coming out soon. Tell us the title and what it's about.
The title changes periodically. the working title right now is The Communion of Saints. And I just finished it 2 days ago, so I feel very good about it. So it's basically about, this really is a novel. It really is fictional. There's not really any autobiography in it except the area. But it takes place in upstate New York in a small town. But it's really about race, class, gender, sexual orientation, how all these issues divide us. You know, they can be a wall, and that wall can separate us from each other, but they can also be a wall that holds us in together and kind of traps us in together where we have to work these things through. So I put a number of disparate people together, and it's about the arbitrary relationships that happen from there, the way that they influence each other, and the way that, you know, hate and redemption can happen in the same place, and that we're all capable of hurting each other, and that whether we're caught or ever brought to justice, largely has to do with class, gender, race, you know, who takes the blame, who gets away.
Mm-hmm. You write poetry and short stories. What is your subject in regard to some of these things? Are you always writing from the point of view as somebody who's kind of an outsider?
Maybe. I think that with this, I think probably yes. With this novel, the main thread of the story is a middle-aged woman who has recently lost her husband, and she's grieving, and that's her process throughout the book. So when I started the book with her, that seemed very different to me. She was white, she was heterosexual, she was a mother, she was married to a man, and that, you know, she should be very much an insider in society. But of course, really it's about the ways in which everybody is alienated and fights for acceptance in the culture in which they live.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have no idea when this new novel is going to be coming out, huh?
No.
You just finished it 2 days ago?
Yeah, every book is a new process for me. So now I have to start over and find an agent, find a publisher, you know, do the marketing stuff.
Uh-huh. And to tell me what writers have influenced your life. Did you have any major writers that have followed you through? And
I think one of my major influences is Margaret Atwood.
Mm.
And from the very first novel, I have benefited a lot by studying her structure and the way that she writes. And I've read, I think, everything that she has written from the 60s to the present. So she has been one of my major influences.
Uh-huh. And nobody else?
Like
Dorothy Allison? Are you influenced by some of the other lesbian writers?
I was influenced by Dorothy Allison. Bastard Out of Carolina came out shortly before, I think, Amnesty came out, my first book. And I was certainly excited by her style and by the subject matter and the whole idea of, you know, the being gay in a rural area. So certainly, I mean, my mind goes blank right now, but there's hundreds of writers that influence me periodically,
mm-hmm.
you know, depending on what stage I'm at in my work.
I want to ask you this, since you wrote this incredibly open autobiography, how can you describe to people who are not gay how incredibly horrible it is to have to stay in a closet? Can you talk about that issue? How demoralizing, inhuman it is?
It's hard to just sum it up. I mean, the first thing that comes to my mind is living in a world without pronouns. I mean, I wonder how many straight people could really go through life not ever describing what they did over the weekend because they'd have to use a pronoun to, which would out the fact that they have a relationship with someone of the same sex, or never to be able to show public affection the way that people do, just touching someone's elbow when you're crossing the street, small things like that. Taking your partner home for the holidays and being accepted or not being accepted.
And being part of a family.
Yes, right.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
And when students come to you, is that one of the main things that you recommend that they do? They try to slowly but surely come out of the closet, no matter what the circumstances or not?
Yeah, everybody is different. And some people just aren't able to. I mean, it's the same with older people that I talk to who are in the closet. I mean, you know, when I was younger, I felt very much like everybody needed to come out of the closet right now and, you know, show everybody where we are.
Yeah.
Now I feel much more like everyone is an individual and everybody has different circumstances. And, you know, you have to respect where you are and what's around you.
Mm-hmm. But you also need support.
Yeah.
Which is exactly what your role probably has been in, as a professor who's out mm-hmm. in a small town that isn't very accepting, correct? Uh-huh.
Yeah. But even the small town, Mansfield, where I teach, has changed a lot in the last few years. I mean, it does have a gay, lesbian student group now, and we have domestic partnership, which is new this year. We have coffee shops. We have, you know, it's slowly but surely, it's working on its, you know, evolving.
And in a perfect world, how would you see gay and lesbian people being able to live Would they still have to call attention to the fact that they're gay, or would they just be part of...
Oh, well, certainly. I think they could just be part of what's happening. I mean, there are so many other ways that we define ourselves, you know, by race, by, you know, being anti-war, by being, you know, anti-Bush. I mean, obviously, my you know, prejudices are coming out, but there's so many, certainly so many other ways that I would describe myself, and being a lesbian is just one of those. And I think it would be great if it was, you know, something that we could celebrate, but also just have accepted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And was there any major surprise that you came upon after you wrote that book? How about people's kindnesses? Were you surprised by some of that and some of the acceptance?
Oh, yes. I mean, I can certainly dwell on the negative responses of the people of Wellsboro, but there were a lot of people who were very supportive. And, you know, they'd call us and tell us, you know, I just want you to know that we support you. And they'd write letters to the editor back. And, you know, people would come up to us in the grocery store and say, oh, you know, Zoe, she must be about 7 months old now, or her birthday must be coming up. And so in some ways, it was like being minor celebrities. And that was okay, but we just didn't want to keep being the poster children for...
Mm-hmm. So you had some really good experiences.
Oh, yes.
Too.
And my mother, I have to say, is a woman who has changed a great deal in the last 20 years. And from having a lot of trouble accepting this to really... educating herself and being accepting and loving Connie and including Connie in everything. And she's 92, so
wow.
If she can do it, I think that, you know, everybody can.
Now, you're a professor of English.
Yes.
Do you teach creative writing? Tell us a little bit about what you teach and how you go about it.
I teach a series of creative writing classes, creative writing, fiction writing, novel writing, different levels within that. I also teach gay and lesbian lit. I taught the first course on that at Mansfield. I teach political literature. This fall I'm teaching a class in graphic novel. And, of course, I teach composition.
What is a graphic novel? What does that mean?
That means, you know, it's like, you know, a comic book, like a story that's told in pictures.
Ah.
In which the art is as important as the words. So, and that's something that I actually don't know a lot about. And one of the things I love about teaching is being able to educate myself through teaching students.
Mm-hmm. And what do you recommend to your students? What is one of the adages that Louise Bloom tells people as a professional writer that they should look for and work toward?
I tell them to write, to write every day, to not worry about whether it's good or not, but to just... get it out there, keep writing, keep reading all the time, and that eventually they're going to be ready to show that writing to other people, and then they move into another sphere of workshopping and peer edits and things. But the very first thing, you know, is that they all have something to say, and it's just a matter of saying it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, Louise Bloom, we have run out of time. I want to thank you so much for joining us. And I do recommend her memoir, You're Not From Around Here, Are You? A Lesbian in Small Town America. It's a fascinating memoir, deeply moving, and I really recommend it to everyone.
Thank you so much, Tish.
Thank you. Our audio producer is Nate Richardson at Rep Studio in Ithaca, New York. We are supported in part by the Arts of the Southern Finger Lakes in Corning, New York. Our theme music was composed by Diego Vega. And visit us online at outofboundsradioshow.com. We'll be back next week. I'm Tish Perlman.